The Press Box is here to catch you up on the latest media stories. Hosted by Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker, these guys have the insight on the biggest stories you care about. Check out The Press Box on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by Lincoln in the all-new 2024 Nautilus Hybrid. Featuring a customizable 48-inch panoramic display, available Revel audio system, and available perfect position front seats with active motion massage. Oh my God, the world isn't wide enough. Visit Lincoln.com to learn more. Some models, trims, and features may not be available or may be subject to change. Check with your local retailer for current information. Lincoln and Nautilus are trademarks of Ford or its affiliates. All right, the Prestige TV podcast. I'm Bill Simmons. I'm with David Shoemaker. We just watched Heels, the final episode, the season finale. They only did 8. I feel like they created the show just for us, David Shoemaker. It's about,
you know, it's about funny.
Storytelling. It's wrestling and storytelling, your two favorite things.
Well, that's it, right? I mean, Mike Waldron, who created this show, and full disclosure, I know Mike a little bit. I read the script of the first episode way, way, way back. But he's a big wrestling fan. Like, he's a diehard wrestling fan. But as you watch the show, what you realize is there's so much of him coming through, but less as a wrestling fan and more as a writer, right? I mean, it sounds so silly to say, but this is like one of the, you can take it or leave it as a wrestling show. I think it's fantastic, but it's one of the best shows about like the creative process that's come along in a long time.
Yeah, it really leans into it in a way that I guess could have gone terrible if it wasn't in the right hands, but that somebody who clearly loves the business, who clearly reads everything, who clearly thought about narratives and how the best wrestling storylines, they really kind of marinated and thought through and took care of and took their time with versus, you know, and we always complain about WWE with some of the stuff when they race through things or they, you know, they'll be telling a story, then they'll abandon it. Somebody will win a title, they'll lose it a week later.
Yeah, the phrase that keeps coming up is they punish you for paying attention, right? And this is a show that's very much about the slow burn. And it's actually not just the story that it told. I mean, the season itself was a slow burn. And I think it, you know, very deliberately so.
I like stuff about brothers and rivalries and sisters too, but like siblings is always like, I always feel like that's an untapped thing. So that's the heart of the show, obviously. It's these two brothers. I thought the pilot was great. The twist in the pilot that basically sets up the entire season and this kind of rivalry, weird relationship that Ace and his brother have, where it's just, you're like, are these guys on the same side or not? Is this going to unravel or not? And in a real way, their relationship was almost like wrestling. It's like what we grew up with Hulk Hogan. And is Orndorff going to turn on Hulk Hogan today? Is Savage going to turn on Hogan? And it's the same thing with this show where I'm like, is Ace going to turn? Is he going to turn on his brother? And you're just waiting for it and waiting for it.
Yeah, I mean, the first episode, the pilot, they did, in wrestling terms, they did sort of shotgun that angle, right? They should, and they put them opposed. They put the two brothers opposite each other in the ring in a very real and literal way that, it leaves you a little bit wondering, is that how, what would really happen? Would he really do that to his brother? Whatever. But that story, they're able to sort of fill in the blanks as the season goes on. Right. And then the sort of bigger story about, well, listen, I mean, so much of the story on the screen is about who, about turning somebody into a babyface or a heel, right? The biggest good guy on the show wants to stay a good guy, but it makes business sense to turn him into a bad guy so they can turn him into a good guy again in the future. I mean, the show is really about that in a larger sense too, right? It's about people that you can't tell if they're good guys or bad guys, and they're all trying to be a thing that they're not, right? They're all trying to, they keep making mistakes. They keep, like, you know, not living up to what's expected of them. But it's about getting to that place in the end.
Yeah, and also who gets pushed, who doesn't get pushed.
Yeah.
You have Rooster, who's clearly talented, the black wrestler in the show, who the shorter one, not James Harrison, who probably should be getting a push, and Jack's not seeing it for whatever reason, and he's really focused on Jack and Ace and how that storyline's going. Rooster ends up leaving, which is also a thing that happens all the time in wrestling, right? And then you have the rival promoter. It taps into the independent stuff, too, that we've, you know, is part of wrestling. Is like, you want to have a star in your local territory, but you don't want the star to get too big because then he's going to leave. How do you take advantage of the up-and-coming star without actually losing the up-and-coming star, which is the spot that Jack was in with Ace?
I don't want to get too meta here, but Rooster's played by Alan Maldonado, who does deserve the biggest push of all in real life. He's been absolutely insanely good on The Last OG and Blackish. And I mean, he's like everything he's in, he just like, it's just amazing. But yeah, I mean, it really does like, it speaks to so many different aspects of the pro wrestling world. It sort of winks at things that are going on in real life and real time throughout the show. It's so interesting. You know, a great show always makes you kind of want to be there, right? I mean, in Mad Men, you want to like put on your suit and get out some scotch or whatever and like everything like that.
Have a cigarette.
But this show, I mean, this is maybe just too insidery, but by the end, I so desperately wanted to live in Duffy, Georgia, where you can go see like, or drive down to Florida and just see two like insanely excited small venue wrestling matches, right? I mean, it's just like the crowd's just like packed in. And at first you're like, yeah, that's a little bit big. It's a little bit Hollywood. But by the end, you're just like, oh, I want to be there so badly. This seems like just like this, like everything's at stake in the ring. And it is. I mean, it's really fantastic.
Do these Duffy type venues exist as perfect in real life as they do in this show?
No. I mean, the Duffy, the Dome, you know, it's a home of Duffy wrestling, you know, reminds me more than anything else of the Dallas Sportatorium where the WCCW World Class was based out of. And I got to go there in the, you know, late 90s, right? You know, in its dying days.
ECW in the mid 90s was a little piece of that too, right?
It was the venue wasn't just wrestling, I guess, in the ECW days, it fully embodied that venue. I mean, that was
the NXT venue is a little like this too. I don't think it's as cool as this little Duffy Dome that they built. Yeah, but same kind of premise.
And then the Florida, I mean, the FWD, Florida Wrestling Dystopia, like the rival federation, when they put on their big show towards the end, it reminded me a lot of kind of Lucha Underground, where like we're having this, we're like, we've turned this soundstage into Thunderdome, sort of, you know, there are definitely those places around. But the idea that these places are running in small town, I mean, it's mostly a relic of the past because there's so much, you know, especially now wrestling on TV and stuff, it's harder to turn out giant crowds like that, you know?
Was it just me or were you watching this show and thinking of the subtle AEW parallels with it of Cody Rhodes basically starting that thing?
Yeah.
You know, obviously more money, bigger platform. He was able to get a Turner relationship right away. So it's not, he was national. This is local, but same kind of thing where they were trying to zag against the WWE and really care about how do we build around 6 to 8 guys? How does storytelling really matter? How does the actual wrestling really matter? And maybe that's a way we can beat WWE. I kept thinking about it as I watched this season.
Well, listen, I don't think there were a lot of winks throughout the show. I don't think there was any coincidence that they needed to sell 10,000 tickets for their big, you know, state fair show, because that was like that's the exact number that AEW or that Cody Rhodes was trying to sell in his first, you know, proto AEW venture.
And there's some Cody Rhodes, Jack. A couple parallels there.
There's a lot going on there. It's funny because the show was conceived before AEW was a thing, but it's sort of the existence of AEW sort of gives the show a different sort of relevance, right? Like if it's like a small town Georgia production and they're saying, oh, we want to be the next we want to be the competition. You're sort of like, really? I mean, that's, you know, that there's not a lot of room for that, but it does make it seem more vital and more interesting that when you see them put on a good show, you're like, like there's a lot of potential there. You know, I mean, it made it those parallels made it definitely cool.
They lucked out with the two brothers, both of whom were really, really good and really, really believable as wrestlers. Stephen Amell, no surprise. He was a staple at the WWE shows.
Sure.
He was in Arrow, great athlete. And when I even heard they were doing this show, I was not surprised he was the lead. I think he really gets it. He cares about this stuff. But was also really believable. And it's not just about nailing the wrestling stuff. You nailing the promos, nailing the way you come into the ring, nailing the way you talk to the crowd and how you raise and lower your voice. Like, that's not hard. The other guy, Alexander, I can't remember his last name, who played Ace, also really good. Those two guys, like, I don't have a lot of criticism for either of them. Do you?
No, not at all. I mean, it's Alexander Ludwig is the guy's name. He's absolutely fantastic. And I think if I remember correctly, they couldn't make the show at first when they wanted to because they couldn't cast those roles. And both of those guys kind of got out of, like, both of their initial engagements ended and they got to make the show based around them. Right.
Right.
So it was just so fortuitous. Like, I mean, it's so hard to cast believable wrestlers in fiction roles, right? I mean, it's like, I always think of whenever they would do like football movies and it would just be like the same six fat guys who were just like, who would be the right linemen just like hanging around the back. And you're like, that's not what, like, a football player does. Like, all football players don't actually look like Warren Sapp. They look like scary monsters, right?
Yeah.
But it always just seems so silly. Wrestling's even harder than that because it's not just being ripped, right? It's having a certain sort of like, I'm strong, but also like I've fallen down 9,000 times body, right?
And there's a continuity to how they move that they've just been doing it for a long time. And you can just tell it's in their DNA. And I think that's so hard to translate.
It really is. I mean, I think it was episode, was it 3 or 4 when it's episode 3 when Jack comes to the ring and cuts the heel promo on the crowd. That was maybe until the very last episode, that was the most sort of pitch perfect moment of the show because it was so spot on. Like you mentioned, I mean, it takes a wrestling fan. You see when celebrities show up in WWE or whatever, you can tell who's a real lifelong wrestling fan and who's not, because it's a different kind of acting and it takes a certain sort of lifelong addiction to it to really know what to do, to really be able to embody the role. And you saw that in Jack. You saw that in a lot of the creation of the whole show. It really felt spot on. And then, so, I mean, like that heel promo with the Jack cut, and then CM Punk comes out as Ricky Rabies. CM Punk was, I was scared to death when I saw like the teaser of him. He was so good. And it was,
he really,
like,
was. It was shocking.
It was really fun. And then they were like, the storytelling in that sequence was just unbelievable. There was like in the ring, and then they had the girl, like the friends of the wife, like the girls who were coming to the show for the first time. And they were the sort of the avatar for your wife who's watching next to you as you're watching the show. But somehow you're like, then you realize you're cheering along with them and reacting the same way. And then Ace turns heel. And the whole, that was just an incredible sequence. And there's a number of them in the season where you're just like so wrapped up in just the sort of the narrative of pro wrestling in a very sort of authentic way.
I think that the CM Punk episode, that was probably my favorite 15-minute sequence in any of the shows, just because they create this character who you're watching it and you're going, you know, this guy could actually work as a real, this guy, the WWE could just have Ricky Rabies and I would be all in. This guy could have a 6-month run doing something, and the way he was using his valet and the whole thing. But
and by the way, I just want to say, as the Southerner, the resident Southerner in this conversation, I don't have quite the aversion to put on Southern accents that I know you do for Boston accents. The accents in this show were a little bit all over the place. I've grown accustomed to that throughout my life. Yeah. But I just want to say for the record, I thought CM Punk's really like put on generic Southern accent. I'm more fine with that than somebody who's trying really hard and only getting 85% of the way there. Like, it was, he was just being a guy, being a character. And that's what wrestling is. And that was fine for the show.
Yeah, I thought Stephen Amell, the first episode, I didn't feel like he totally had the accent down yet. And I was like, oh boy. But like the third one, he had it. So it's just, it's like reps. He's doing it for a year. You're going to get better.
With the Southern accent, it's more reps than probably any other accent. Because here's the thing. In the South, not everybody talks like Gomer Pyle, right? Everybody has different variations of accent and not. So all you have to do is just have a 1% of a Southern accent And then the rest is just you being comfortable in the character, right? And just comfortable with the voice. So I thought, as the season went on, that just got, it smoothed out pretty quickly.
Well, the other thing, they nailed almost every character on the show.
Mm.
The Chris Bauer character, who is my favorite character, unbelievable, culminates in him shitting in his pants. But one of my favorite, favorite that guy actors, I've been with him since 8mm. He was in 61. He was in The Wire. He played Sabaka. He's just one of those guys. He was in the David Simon porn show. He's one of those guys where you see him and you're like, oh, I love this guy. I thought he was, I actually think he might get nominated for an Emmy for the show. I thought he was that good. How about his promo in the last episode? It was like watching fucking Ric Flair.
Well, watching him and Mary McCormick, when they were going back and forth, like, you know, when they're in very personal ways, that was just as good as the promo work. And setting those two things side by side in the show really made it, I mean, really, I think did a lot of justice to him as a performer. The Ric Flair airplane thing, another really just bizarrely coincidental bit of timing, because like Vice's show, Dark Side of the Ring, ran that thing about Ric Flair and the plane ride from hell right around the same time. But that, you know, so there was that. But Chris Bauer was, I mean, you called Chris Bauer that guy. I mean, and he's
Chris Bauer now, I think. He was that guy for a while. Now he became Sabaka, and now he's Chris Bauer, I think.
But Mike O'Malley, your friend who produced the show, is a legendary that guy. I mean, he was out. Right. He's obviously was a huge star of his own sitcom for a little bit, but like has evolved into a that guy. But I think Chris.
Yeah, it's true. He's turned into that guy late in his career, even though he's Mike O'Malley. He kind of disappears into these different roles.
And this show is so full of that guys that I think there must have been a little bit of a deliberate decision there. I thought that Chris Bauer, because he's a main character, had to like relinquish the guy championship belt This is might be controversial, but I think Joel Murray, who was Eddie Earl, like the used car dealer, like grabbed the that guy championship belt during this show because he was the that guy of this show. But there were I mentioned Alan Maldonado earlier. You know, I mean, Mary McCormick is a giant star to some people, but is sort of like a lot of people out there.
A lot of people know her as Private Parts. She was Howard Stern's wife in Private Parts. But I thought she was, that's a part that just could have sucked. And she was really good. She had real nuance.
Dude, I was out on her for like an episode and a half, not because of her performance, which was amazing, but because I was so sure that part was not going to work. Like anybody else, it would have flopped. And so I was like, oh, this is going to be a flop. But she was so good. And by the second half of the season, she just takes your breath away every time she's on screen. I mean, and by the way, her role in this show is one of those where, I mean, you know, you kind of give yourself over to the show. The staff of the Duffy Wrestling League is a little bit bigger, I think, than most.
Yeah, what are they doing on this spare time?
But her place there felt so organic and believable that even though she's like the executive producer and you're like, would that really happen? You just believe every second she's on the screen. She's just such a powerful actor.
Yeah, what's her career path? Is she making enough money? What, like, that was the only one where I had some unanswered questions. Did anyone try to poach her? Did she work for a bigger company at some point? She was great though. And then the other guy I loved, the guy who got his knee ripped up, who they really set up.
Bobby Penn.
Bobby Penn.
Bobby Penn is the cousin Greg of the show, right?
Yes.
He's like, it's like maybe just because of the necessity of the narrative or whatever. He's sort of like fast forwards past cousin Greg, right? He like goes through this giant blossoming arc throughout the course of the show and you love him and you're attracted to him exactly the same way, but he's such a dope, but he's like you really want to cheer for him. And on a show that's all about, you know, baby faces and heels, obviously it's the title. Like he's the guy that you don't usually watch prestige television shows and find yourself rooting for the actual good guy, right? The good guy is like the loser. And he's a good guy that you actually end up rooting for by the end. By the way, low-key best scene of Bobby Penn was when he's on crutches at the cookout and Ace is like filling his plate for him and he asks Ace to put on ranch dressing literally over everything. That might be the most authentically Southern moment in the entire season. I can't tell you how real that is. Every time you're in a group of people eating, there will be a number of people, but certainly a handful who are just dousing everything, dipping things in ranch dressing. Like everything is ranch dressing and it's beautiful.
when Bobby got his knee shredded by Ace, I was devastated because I was really invested in the Bobby arc. And I actually think they, well, I'm sure they'll have it pay off in season two, but I actually think they made a mistake injuring him that badly. I thought the show missed him the last couple episodes. One of my favorite guys.
I don't think they could have known how electric he was going to be on the screen when they're just writing the character, right? And it is something that's waiting for a future payoff. I mean, he's sort of an archetype. He's this sort of like wide-eyed, corn-fed, you know, just good guy. But he does look like a wrestler. You know, he looks like a guy that could be your top babyface. And I think
100%.
I think they will pay it off. That when he messed up, when he broke his leg, I was so shocked at how in they went in that moment. It wasn't just like, oh, they twisted his ankle. He shouldn't have done that. He like straight up broke the dude. Like it was a compound fracture in the middle of the ring, and they try to kayfabe it off. Like, oh, no, that's just part of the show. But like, that was intense. And I was like,
yeah, I said knee. It was, I blocked that out of my mind. It was they basically Gordon Haywarded him.
It was wild.
It was brutal. They'll probably pay it off next year, and there'll be a good feud with Ace. Then they nailed the Ace's girlfriend in the first part of the show, who eventually wins the title. I thought that actress was fantastic. I thought that's another one where she's pretty tiny in a way that kind of stretches the believability of could she actually be in the ring. But then when you watched her, like she was really well trained. Anytime she had to do anything wrestling, you kind of talked yourself into it. But there was like a little bit of damage with her.
Uh-huh.
But like a little bit of hopefulness too. And it was like exactly the kind of person who maybe gets left behind by Ace when he goes. And then all of a sudden, 5 years later, she's got two kids and she's working at the local store and wondering what happened. They nailed that character. She was great.
She was fantastic. I mean, one thing that we haven't mentioned yet on the show that we have to mention is the very deliberate homage to Friday Night Lights that starts the second the theme song kicks in and the pilot. I mean, this show is trying to evoke Friday Night Lights at every turn, and it makes sense. Like, this must have been the pitch meeting. This is like, hey, this is the wrestler meets Friday Night Lights, right? I mean, it's like, it's very like, that's what they're trying to do. And I could have done without some of the music cues that like that were just trying to make you think of that, but as a comparison, it's a good one, and it's a strong, and it's meaningful. And I think, like Friday Night Lights, this is a testosterone-driven world, but you find that the women are the real strength of the show, right? And
yeah,
we talked about Mary McCormick, and her name is Kelly Berglund, who played Crystal Tyler. And I say her full name because they say her full name throughout the entire show, even after she's been there like every second. They're like, Crystal Tyler tried out to be a wrestler today, which was just kind of awesome because she's not family. They always look at her sort of differently. But yeah, I thought that was great. And you're right, she's small. But one thing this show did shockingly well is they leaned into the people's real sizes and shapes in a way that a lot of shows try to, a lot of professional wrestling tries to sort of sidestep, right? Like I always say, it's okay to be a short professional wrestler because there's all these people with issues about size. It's okay to be short, but I want the announcers to acknowledge that this dude's short and not pretend like he's 6'5" when he's 5'5", right? And they did that. They talked about how small she was. They talked about the improbability of it all. And then at the end, when she somehow becomes the champion, you buy it. And it's like, it was so fulfilling that ending. It was.
I didn't see that one coming. I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought O'Malley, who he's my friend, so I'm biased, but he was, I thought, awesome with the big beard. It just seemed like a different person. I thought he was going to come in the ring and grab the belt at the end. And mm-hmm. that was going to be the cliffhanger of, oh my God, O'Malley has their belt. This is now that's going to be, but no, all of a sudden Crystal's climbing the ladder. And we have Chris Bauer with shit in his pants. We have the two brothers who just shoot fight at each other, mm-hmm. beat the shit out of each other. And then we have her at the top of the ladder. It was an awesome. And then Ace kind of half storming out, not knowing what's going to happen with him because he finds out about the Queen X stuff. Really good ending.
I think that some people watching this who aren't wrestling fans are going to, of everything, going to call into question the pants shitting part of the last one. But so we should point out for the record that many wrestlers, including CM Punk, have shit themselves in the ring.
Yep.
And that is affected, you know, that becomes a part of their legacy.
Yeah, that's wrestling lore. There's a lot. You could do a whole who shit in their pants website and probably have multiple chapters.
But Wild Bill, Chris Bauer, like that was such a believable like character moment for him where he was like, I'm not getting up because I shit myself. And then when he does get up, you're just like, oh my God, my heart's breaking. Oh, no. I mean, it's like, I'm so like my heart is warmed by this moment, you know? And it was great. It was great. You're right about it, Mike O'Malley. He was such a delicious heel that like, in some ways, like only the producer of the show would be able to go in. I mean, to be able to like just go all jump in feet first the way that he did. And only in a show about wrestling can you have a character like that where you're not, where it's like he's such a bad guy, so transparently a bad guy, and yet like such a sort of believable character.
We mentioned the characters that worked. We mentioned the Friday Night Lights tie-in, which is what my wife's biggest takeaway of the show. She was like, why didn't they just use the Explosions of the Sky, whatever that band was, that Friday Night Lights, like just go the whole way. We all would have been fine with it, right? It would have been good to hear that again. But they definitely tried to do that. The one character that didn't work was Jack's wife. I think they were struggling to figure out what's her role in this. So basically by the end, after 8 episodes, she's trying to say like, I married a baby face, but he's playing a heel and she's having issues with it. But it's kind of like, all right, you married this guy who's running his dad's, you know, wrestling thing. And this is who he is. He's in the Duffy Dome. He's a wrestler and this is what he cares about. And in the first couple episodes, it seems like she's totally cool with it and she gets it. And then it kind of starts shifting over the 8 episodes. And I'm not sure why. It almost seems like it shifted just because they couldn't figure out anything for her to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, I'm sure, noble lawnmower salesmen out there in the world, but Jack, I mean, is a lawnmower salesman when he's not being a wrestler. The wrestling thing is not paying the bills, right? So yes. It's not like, I think most people would be excited if their lawnmower salesman husband had a passion in life beyond lawnmower sales, right? So, you know, that part is a little bit weird. I sort of just, not because of Stacy, the character, or the actress Allison Luff, she was an amazing performer. But every time someone plays guitar and sings with nothing else going on a show, I get a little bit uncomfortable as an anxiety ridden person.
Yeah, it's like they were giving her a couple shots in the basketball game.
There was a lot of that for
Allison.
I think that most of the problem for me was that a lot of her role was like duplicative, right? I mean, like when she would talk to him about the storytelling process, like that ends up being a role that Ace takes towards the end, right? And at the end, Stacy sings the national anthem. That's her big triumph, but really, it's overshadowed by Crystal's triumph as in, you know, becoming a wrestler and winning the match. So there's just sort of, it did seem like they were kind of wondering what to do with her. Now, she did manage to humanize Jack, who was without her. Well, in the beginning, Jack seems like, I mean, as she said, in the beginning, Jack is the babyface because he's the main character of the show and he sort of turns heel and she's able to give some sort of narration to that process and some depth to it. I just think that at the end of the day, her being so put off by the fact that he wanted to turn his brother heel wanted to pull the marionette strings or whatever, that just seems like something that you probably just laugh about. You know, it's like it's not the end of the world. Although I guess you kind of have to just separate yourself a little bit and just give yourself over to the show. The drama between Jack and Ace was about him turning heel was, you know, it's melodramatic, but I think there was a better way to
create tension with them. Like maybe Jack cheated on her on one thing 3 years ago and she was having trouble getting past it. Maybe he was covering up something for somebody else that she felt morally. You know, a lot of the show, and I think the funniest thing of the show unintentionally for me was just Jack working on the scripts of the show. Like, like he's, I don't know. Like he's actually writing a television show. It's like, it's a wrestling match. These guys go out there. They just call moves. Yeah. It's not something, it's like, hey, what are you doing this weekend? I'm planning out our house show. 2 Fridays from now. I don't know how long that would take.
If my wife was like, hey, we got to go. My friend's having a picnic for his kid's birthday. We got to go. And, you know, it's going to be a few. And I was just like, no, I got to stay home and write out the script for the wrestling show I'm putting on next weekend. She might say okay, but she would not believe that I was writing a script for a wrestling show for those 5 hours.
How
or
long,
whatever.
You know better than anybody. Like, how long would it take to actually script out five matches on a card?
I think it stretches. It beggars belief that anyone would be okay with their significant other just sitting in front of a computer for that long to do something like that. But even if you factor in writer's block, I don't think most married couples with kids have room for writer's block in their life, right? It's like, if your wife walked in and you were staring at a blank computer screen, and then like 3 hours later, it was the same thing, I think she'd be like, why don't you just lean into the podcasting,
see a psychiatrist.
Bill?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, he's like
Aaron Sorkin. He thought he was writing season two of The West Wing. It's like, settle down. You have just guys clothesline each other. And then somebody, the ref gets hit, squash match done. Next one.
Yeah.
Take an hour.
I wondered throughout the show if it would have been better off if they had been divorced when the show started and let, you know, just sort of like put that relationship a little bit in the background. But it's,
yeah, they didn't plant enough seeds, I don't feel like, with that relationship. And that I was, so comparing it to Succession, which is coming back next week, I think one of the great things about Succession and why I think it's one of the best shows of the last 15 years, every character is a home run. All the 8-9 characters that we care about, I'm completely invested in them. And the character that should go wrong and doesn't is Connor. Connor should be the one that, he should be like the one that's like, oh man, now they got to have the Connor scene. I don't really care. But every time they go to any other character, I'm in. And the wife on this show was the weak link. Now, we saw this happen in Billions too, where Axe's wife in the first two seasons, they were really trying to get going in all these different ways. And, and ultimately, it's just like, I don't know why she's here other than to just kind of get mad at Axe because he's a hedge fund billionaire, which is the guy she, like, what, like, what? This is who he is. This is who he married. There's nowhere to go. And they kind of had to shove her out of the show.
Well, I mean, part of what makes Succession so great is that on the production side, they're as ruthless as the characters on the show, right? Because like there was like a lengthy conversation in Ringer Slack the other day about the fact that Roman had kids in the first episode and they were never, and potentially a significant other that was never mentioned again.
Is that true?
Yeah. It might've been his girlfriend's kid. Like there's a lot of dispute over what was going on, but the fact of the matter is whatever that was never mentioned again. And that's the sort of thing where like most shows would not have the confidence to introduce something and then just be like, no, we're going to concentrate on everything else right now, you know?
Yeah.
And that, and yeah, I mean, every show could probably benefit from that. And I think that's definitely a reasonable take about this one.
One thing that they did really well was the flashbacks to the relationship with the brother, with the father who killed himself, which that's another thing that in the wrong hands could just completely derail the show and you could get completely wrong and you're like, why are we here? Why do we do this? But I thought all that worked too. Where, before we go, where do you see, I'll tell you the thing I'm worried about with season two, this guy, Mike Waldron, who created this show, who's like a passion project for him, took years to make the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, now he's like a famous dude. He did Loki and he's going to have all these opportunities.
He's doing the Doctor Strange movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hope, I don't know. I have no inside information, but if this comes back for season two and it's not in his voice or he's like overseeing it, but somebody else is actually writing it, that makes me nervous.
Yeah. It's funny because you mentioned their dad, Tom Spade, played amazingly by David James Elliott, who again,
Jag.
Yeah. Maybe he's a that guy now too.
No, he's Jag. He's Jag for life.
I mean, I think one really fun thing, I don't think they'll do it because obviously they're leaning into the characters that they have in the Friday Night Lightsness of the whole thing. But I think it'd be super fun if season two was just like Duffy Wrestling League 1995. Let's just spend half the season.
Like in Lost, we just go backwards?
Yeah. Just have Chris Bauer and David James Elliott playing young and get some other dudes around them and just like, let's just drink beer and have, you know, let's just have a good
spin-off time. You know, the best thing that this show has is you can just have people coming in and out.
Yeah.
They could introduce three new people in season two. They could make Ricky Rabies a full-time character. You know, you can dump a character that's not working and you can just have this constant evolving door because that's what it's like when you have a small wrestling thing like this. People are coming and going constantly.
Mm-hmm. No, they could definitely do that. I think they did a really good job of handling the number of characters that they had, especially in the locker room where that can get real messy and confusing and everything else. I mean, they did a good job of the different characters had sort of archetypes, so you could easily delineate them
James
in your
Harrison.
Mind.
Yeah, he's like
James
the big...
Harrison was his name. His wrestling name was Apocalypse, which is just perfect. yeah, I mean they could definitely do that. But I think that if you want to try to imagine where it's going to go, I think that we have most of the information right in front of us. I mean, we talked about. I mean, I think that frankly they'll probably lean into Stacy to figure out really the significance of that. You know, the main relationship in the show, and then. You know, the main role is Kelly, you know, Crystal is going to be a huge player. She's the new champion. They got to figure out how to validate that post facto, you know, and are they going to do a bunch of like intergender matches? Are they going to like, you know, introduce more women onto the show because they could do that too, you know? I mean, Jack and Ace, I mean, they're going to be half of the show no matter what happens, right? I mean, they're just those two brothers trying to figure it out. Maybe well,
unless... Maybe, unless, this is my prediction.
I got an idea here. Okay, go.
I think Ace goes and goes to Florida and works for O'Malley.
Oh.
And I think we move toward a possible merger of the two territories.
I'm glad that you
and
said that.
That becomes the season two crux of Ace becomes the biggest star in the Florida territory and feuds with Rooster. Jack figures out he's got Wild Bill. Figures out some young person. Crystal becomes a big star. Somebody might poach her. And now it's like his side is falling apart. The merger would be the only thing that saves him. Now he needs his brother. Now his brother has to pull him in. Now the power relationship is flipped.
He needs the merger. I actually like that a lot. I think that's a really good idea.
I could see that one going. Then we get more O'Malley. We get Ace. We get a little more Rooster.
Charlie Gully, by the way, is Mike O'Malley's character's name, which is just an all-time great character name. There's a lot of good names in the show. I think that I would love to see that.
Maybe Bobby becomes the big face in season two, because we all love Bobby, more Bobby.
Yeah.
So maybe Bobby versus Jack is like the big rivalry but it's not enough. They need to merge.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, one of the things as just a wrestling geek that I kept thinking throughout the show is that, well, one, I wanted to see more just wrestling because they were doing such a good job of it. But two, that I specifically wanted to see the rival wrestling company, that I wanted to see, you know, FWD or whatever. Like I wanted to just like engage in full matches over there and see who their big characters were and like see what the appeal is of this show. Obviously they talked about it being bloodier and whatever else and more excessive, and they showed us some, but when you start talking about a merger, it makes me think like, oh man, I would love to be rooting for the merger. And in order to really root for the merger, you got to be thinking, oh man, I want to see Jack take on the top guy over there in Florida, you know, that, because that's what you would always, if you lived in Georgia in the 80s and you miraculously, or if you lived in the panhandle of Florida and you had access to Florida and Georgia wrestling, these are the things that we were thinking all the time, right? I want to see like Dusty Rhodes come and take on the Andersons. I want to see these two worlds collide, but it's because you get to see him and you get to enjoy him and you don't care as much about the rivalry. I mean, it's like a college football rivalry. It's like you're animated by it, but you don't really want to get into, like, you don't really want to punch the other guys in the face, or maybe you do, and I don't know, who knows. But I think I would love to see, to get more into Florida and more into Mike O'Malley and all that stuff. And I think a merger.
Well, they also have, they have another card where they can have the big wrestling federation, which we don't really have a feel for, but they could basically parody Vince McMahon and have the aging bombastic promoter come in and try to like poach Crystal basically.
Okay, so I know we have to put a pin in this soon, but there's a scene where we mentioned it before, where Chris Bowers, Wild Bill, he gets drunk on a flight, comes out naked, actually shockingly really naked. I mean, there was a lot of, there was some legit male nudity going on in the scene, which is fantastic. And then he gets, of course, like fired by the company up north, which is like WWE. I mean, that's obvious. Yeah. But then when he comes out, does a press conference to sort of publicly apologize and kind of goes off script. He basically cuts a promo, like a wrestler promo, but the content of it is the sort of like Roddy Piper, like the post wrestling complaint. Like anytime there's a big feature on HBO or whatever about what happens to, what happens to these wrestlers after their careers, he puts it into poetry. And it's weirdly like one of the most compelling cases against the wrestling industry that you could see in a concise scene.
Yeah.
And it's really sort of just heartrending, but it's packaged in this love letter to pro wrestling, which I think makes it in some ways even more powerful.
Last question. Who should have been more hurt and offended that they had Mick Foley play the podcaster who goes and interviews Jack? You or me? I mean, ultimately, whose feelings were more deep down secretly hurt?
Well, I mean, if it had been you,
Have wanted to play yourself, or would you have wanted to play like Derek Foomaker? So they twist your name.
My fake name is Davis Shoemaker.
I would have been Simon Williams. I could have been the Simon Williams report.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the guy was playing. Mick Foley played the role, was playing an ex-wrestler who, this is a podcast I would 1,000,000% listen to.
Yeah, can we have this?
An ex-wrestler like digging into the details about pro wrestling from rural Georgia, who really cares about this local promotion but keeps it real. I mean, I don't know that person exists in real life, so I don't know who to compare. I don't know who should have been playing that role, but I would listen to that podcast if it was out there.
Another possibility for season 2. All right, we have to go. Kaya McMullen produced this podcast. Myself and David Shoemaker are on it. We have a lot of good stuff on Prestige TV podcast this week. We have Scenes from a Marriage, and we have a ton of Succession stuff coming. So there you go. Be ready for it. Thanks, Shoemaker. It was good to see you.
Oh, it was great to see you too. And thanks to Heels for existing. It was really fun.
Yeah, thanks. Bring back season 2.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.